This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, we review some of the big domestic and international stories of 2018. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Here in the United States, the ongoing special counsel investigation into Russia's interference in the U.S. 2016 presidential election and any possible links between Donald Trump's presidential campaign and Moscow continued apace. The investigation has thus far resulted in dozens of indictments for federal crimes and at least 8 guilty pleas or convictions. Due to cooperation from former Trump National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, former personal lawyer Michael Cohen, and to a lesser extent, former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort, the Russia probe is beginning to zero in on the crucial question of conspiracy. And if anyone doubted the unanimous assessment from the U.S. intelligence community that Moscow meddled in our election, incontrovertible evidence was provided in 2018. In February, Robert Mueller indicted 13 Russian citizens and 3 Russian entities, most notably the nefarious Internet Research Agency, for engaging in a widespread, sophisicated disinformation campaign meant to hurt Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton and help Republican Donald Trump. And in July, 12 members of the Russian Military Intelligence Service, or GRU, were indicted for hacking the email servers of the Democratic National Committee. In a game changer for the U.S. political landscape, the November 2018 midterm elections delivered a so-called blue wave, catapulting Democrats into the majority in the House of Representatives. With the power to hold hearings, conduct investigations, and deliver subpoenas, the Democrats could provide what some analysts say is an important check on the executive branch. Persistent attacks on Democratic institutions like the mainstream media, law enforcement agencies, such as the FBI, and disparagement of immigrants troubled citizens and lawmakers alike. Some analysts likened the rhetoric to a veritable assault on the truth. The White House's dismissal of the CIA's assessment that Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman was indeed behind the brutal murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi in the Saudi Arabian consulate in Istanbul in October further eroded faith in traditional U.S. values and institutions that undergird the republic. More stories dominated 2018 headlines: the massacre of 17 students and staff at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, the deadliest shooting at a high school in U.S. history. In another lamentable first, a deranged anti-Semite gunned down 11 innocent Jews in a synagogue in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the deadliest attack on the American Jewish community in U.S. history. Social media posts rife with lies, conspiracy theories, and anti-Semitic tropes apparently fueled the alleged gunman's anger and actions. We witnessed a controversial and bruising confirmation battle for President Trump's second Supreme Court justice nominee, Brett Kavanaugh, whose appointment may change the future direction of the court. A zero-toleration immigration policy, which resulted in family separations at the U.S.-Mexico border, provoked outrage among lawmakers and a cross-section of Americans, forcing the Trump administration to backtrack. On the international front, Donald Trump withdrew the United States from the Iran nuclear deal. Yet, he agreed to meet North Korean despot Kim Jong-un in Singapore in an attempt to persuade the communist country to denuclearize. President Trump ignited a trade war with China and also alienated many allies through the imposition of tariffs. Turmoil in Europe, Britain struggled to find a consensus on Brexit, and French President Emmanuel Macron, who created in 2016 the En Marche movement, a new centrist liberal political party, came under attack by an unstructured but no less powerful movement, the Yellow Vests or Gilets Jaunes, who feel marginalized and neglected by his economic policies. These stories were among the most striking developments of 2018, and with us to discuss their impact are two seasoned journalists who are no strangers at these VOA microphones. Michael Williams is a contributor to CBS Radio, and Tracy Wilkinson is diplomatic and foreign policy correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. And both are valued panelists on our sister program, Issues in the News. They join me now at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington to review the past year. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Michael Williams, what's your take on the top domestic and international stories?
The top of the list in
global terms depends on where you're sitting in the world and what's most important to you. Sitting here in the United States, of course, I think the issues regarding Donald Trump and the Mueller investigation, we're so soaked in it, especially here in Washington, day by day by day. It's hard not to argue that that's been the most influential story of my year in particular. And, you know, globally, I think the themes are flux, transition, questioning of the post-World War II order. And we see that here with President Trump and his administration. His whole ethos is about questioning everything, the fact that only he could be right. Everything that's happened before is wrong, and everything that he wants to do is different, and it's right because it's different than everything else that's gone before, which, of course, is just kind of a non-starter in terms of policy, in terms of politics, in my humble opinion. As we see these investigations go forward, I'm reminded of the Old Testament word begat, if you know that one, this begat that. And when you look at what's happening with the investigations and who's coming under indictment and who's coming under investigation, you see that the Trump organization begat the Trump campaign, and the Trump campaign begat the Trump administration. And the entire ethical workings, the entire political workings, the financial workings that happened in the Trump organization has filtered down to the Trump administration. And what may be good in running real estate in Manhattan certainly does not work in running the federal government and, in air quotes, being leader of the free world. So I think that that investigation, as it narrows down and focuses down and I think narrows its focus into the Trump family, I think we're going to see a real reckoning. And why it's better, I think, now to have the press vet you in a campaign, which really never happened for Donald Trump in 2016, that we really didn't vet him very well, the press. He's being vetted now by the criminal justice system, and it's a little bit painful to watch.
Tracy Wilkinson.
Wow, I'm so depressed after that long list that you gave us. There's no good news from the last year. But no, I agree with Michael that I think domestically very important is the investigation into Trump's organization, administration, etc. And I agree that he never learned the lesson that governing is different from running a real estate company. And so it was, I think, a matter of time before this would just all catch up with him. And I think that's what we're seeing now, that, you know, there is no nod even to ethics in real estate business. And that's just not the way you run a country. And so I think that's finally catching up with him. And then I think the attack on the institutions, to me, you know, I was overseas for many, many years and have just come back the last couple of years. And I've been so disheartened because the one thing I always held up was that the United States, for all its many, many problems, did have solid institutions, did have a certain conventional truth and wisdom. And Trump is trying to blow all of that up, questioning the FBI, questioning the judiciary. You know, a Republican questioning the FBI is just unheard of. And so I just find that so disheartening. And it really kind of knocks away the foundation of so much of what we do and believe. And I think that's, to me, the potentially most long-lasting damage that has been done this last year.
So, Michael Williams, as a result of the elections in November with the Democrats coming to power, at least in the House of Representatives, how do you think that may change the landscape?
Well, the most obvious change is there is now a check on his power within the House of Representatives. They have subpoena power. They have the ability to call investigations and to really put a real microscope into the Trump administration in a way that the previous head of the intelligence committees and other committees would not do under GOP guidance. So this is the most immediate check. And again, the Democrats have to be very careful not to overplay their hand in this. They are already looking to 2020. And I think with the way our election cycles now, even in 2017, they were probably looking to 2020, but they're certainly looking at it now. And if they overplay their hand in terms of this investigation, it's going to solidify the base and perhaps even grow and convince some independents that the Democrats are more interested in investigating than governing. They have to be very careful about not creating the investigative branch of the government and concentrate on being the legislative branch. Having said all that, it's going to be very, very necessary for them to drill down and look at really what has been happening is in this administration, have hearings, get to the bottom of it, and assist rather than hinder the Mueller investigation as it reaches its inevitable conclusion.
What's your take on the results of the election, Tracy Wilkinson? To what extent that's a big story and perhaps a game changer?
It's potentially a game changer, certainly. And I agree with Michael that these are people who will finally provide some kind of check on this government that has not existed until now. And I also agree they have to be careful. They can't go too far. But very basic things like subpoenaing Trump's tax records, for example, these are fairly basic things and not something that any previous administration would have objected to. this is the only administration that has refused
to. Previous would have had them out in the election.
In beforehand, right. Exactly. You wouldn't have to come to this point. Exactly. And so I do think it's going to be very significant in terms of what we might learn in providing that check. They will have to be careful about not going too far. I don't think whatever they do will grow his base, but it certainly could mobilize his base. And I think that's what the Democrats will have to watch for.
And demographically, it's a very interesting class. Many women, many veterans, Muslims, yes. Mm-hmm. So it'll be very interesting from that point of view as well.
And I just want to add that the untold story, really, sort of internationally, is that not only did the Democrats do very, very well in the House of Representatives on the federal side, they did extraordinarily well in the state houses. And this has always been the canary in the coal mine for American politics, because it's at that level, at the state level in the districts, these are where the districts are drawn. This is how we plot out the pieces of land that choose the representatives that go to Congress. So at a very, very grassroots level, the tide is changing, and that group of people is rejecting the quote-unquote new GOP. It's a huge turn.
Despite a lot of gerrymandering by the GOP in many of those states.
Yeah, right.
Despite that.
Right, despite that. So that's why it's all the more extraordinary.
Indeed.
What about the violence that we're seeing, gun violence, the Parkland shooting? How do you see that event and its ramifications, Michael Williams?
Looked up the statistic, and mass shooting is defined as a shooting incident where four or more people are injured. And as of this point, I believe we have 320 mass shootings in the United States this year. Imagine that. 320 this year as we sit here. Almost one mass shooting per day. It's an astonishing figure when you look at that. All of them should outrage us, but then we have these two shootings to look at, the sort of book in the year, when you have Parkland at the very beginning of the year, and it's hard to believe that's at the beginning of this year. We're so distanced from it by the calendar and emotionally in a way. And then you have Pittsburgh and that horrific shooting of those innocent people in that synagogue. But what they both have solidified now is this feeling that something must be done. I think we've seen a chink in the armor of the National Rifle Association, which is the leading gun lobby here in the United States. And I think we're on the road to gun control, finally maybe getting a foothold.
What do you think, Tracy? Are we on the road to perhaps some kind of sensible gun legislation?
It's hard to see in this country because there's been so much resistance. Just recently, the administration came out with some new education rules that did not address gun violence at all, which was very disappointing to a lot of people. However, at the same time, they did ban bump stocks, the device used to make weapons into more powerful weapons and machine gun-like weapons. So I don't know. It's just, to me, been mind-boggling that there hasn't been more of a move towards real legislation controlling guns. You know, this is the only economically progressive country that has this level of gun violence. We outpace everybody in terms of killings in mass shootings, and it's disgraceful.
And of course, the easy access to guns just fuels the violence. But before that, we have rhetoric that we're seeing circulating on the internet, conspiracy theories, anti-Semitic tropes, racist language. To what extent do you see this relationship between that and these actions?
One of my very first jobs was working for the guy who actually did invent the internet. It's a guy named Vint Cerf, and it was his college graduate school project to create the protocol that now allows the internet to function. And it was miraculous then, and it's miraculous now. But being able to contact every single person on the planet very, very easily is a good thing and a bad thing. And I think the type of violence, the type of easy access to hate and to foment dissension and dissatisfaction is definitely one of the downsides of the internet. But the question is, how do you put the toothpaste back in the tube? Because it's out now. How do you do that?
Well, it's out, but it takes people, whether it's leaders or prominent people in this country, to perhaps fuel it. And we're just seeing this kind of rhetoric from quarters that we would never have imagined. And we are fueling people who normally would be marginalized for their beliefs, their anti-Semitism, their racism. But they are now being mainstreamed.
They're being given a platform. And frankly, it starts at the top. It starts with this president, who at times has tweeted or said things that could be seen also as racist or full of hate. He kind of sets the tone, and so it's become sort of permissible for all kinds of very nasty rhetoric to be espoused all over the place. And then the Russian...
No, I was going to say the lies. I mean, you had alluded, Tracy, to the lies before. I guess the way that people are now so accepting of lies coming out of the White House, coming from the podium in the press room, it's astonishing how those lies have become pervasive in that administration and through shady types of media outlets, and I'll call them shady because I believe that's what they are. But these types of things really help move these false agendas forward. And again, you have a president who I believe started his entire political career on a lie, the lie that Barack Obama was born in Kenya. This was the basis of his entire political career and his conversion to that conservative base. That's what solidified them.
It is disturbing because people who espouse these beliefs should be marginalized and not given a platform. So we are seeing the rise of white supremacists, violent right-wing groups, neo-Nazi groups, the likes of which I've never seen in my lifetime.
Anti-Semites, anti-immigration movements that are very strong. And again, that also is fueled by this government.
And we'll get to that in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Michael Williams, contributor to CBS Radio, and Tracy Wilkinson, diplomatic and foreign policy correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. We're discussing the top stories of 2018. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a hearty year-end shout-out to one of our most loyal fans, James Madza. He's a self-described ardent listener from Benue State, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, speaking of immigration, how about that zero tolerance policy and the family separations, Michael Williams? We're still feeling the ramifications, notwithstanding President Trump walked back the so-called zero tolerance and the family separations.
I think as a nation, our national conscience is still feeling that. Certainly the people who are still sitting there at the border are feeling it. Certainly the people whose families are still separated are feeling it. There are hundreds of children, thousands maybe, who are still separated from their parents. And how does that happen on U.S. watch? How does that happen on U.S. soil? We sat here in this studio, I believe, 2 years ago, Carol, and we talked about the fact that the Syrian immigration crisis was going to be the thin edge of the wedge for a new wave of politics around the world, that immigration was going to cause a type of xenophobic fear that would change the wave of politics. I didn't think that we would see it so starkly as we have at the U.S.-Mexico border. I think it's one of the most embarrassing moments, episodes in U.S. political history, if not in modern times, in the 20th and 21st centuries, maybe ever. It's an embarrassment and a tragedy and an outrage, in my humble opinion.
And what disturbs many, Tracy Wilkinson, is that we are a nation of immigrants, and immigrants are among the most productive citizens in this country. And to hear them characterized as criminals or rapists and so forth.
And murderers.
This is disturbing because it doesn't mean that there are not, you know, bad apples. But to characterize a whole group, I think, is an affront to the values of this country.
To the history of this country, indeed. And again, coming from the top, the president used fear of what he called an invasion of immigrants just before the midterm elections, claiming that, you know, these caravans were bringing hundreds of criminals and drugs and et cetera to the border. And he even sent the U.S. military there to, quote unquote, protect our borders. And that is such a manipulation of lie and fear and xenophobia that if it's coming from the top like that, it's not hard to understand how at, you know, much lower levels this kind of fear and hatred spreads.
And of course, at the end of the year, we're still talking about a so-called wall, building a wall. But most objective analysts say that is really not the answer. We have a broken immigration system, and there are many ways that it can be fixed, but there needs to be compromise. And we're just not reaching that with these kinds of dogmatic positions.
No, I mean, these are policy issues. Very smart people have to sit into a room and figure out what the policy issues are and how to do this thing. And the Trump administration and their supporters are selling the wall as a way to keep out different cultures, and a wall won't do that. We've had a sitting California legislator say that brown people, and he used this word, brown people will never be able to assimilate into the United States culture because of how they look. He said that into a microphone, and he's still sitting, by the way. And that is the key of this wall, that the wall is meant to keep out the other. It's meant to keep out a different culture, and that's not what a wall is going to do. Never would, never will.
In the very few minutes we have left, let's do a lightning round on the international stories, some of which I mentioned, the U.S. having withdrawn from the Iran nuclear deal, Singapore summit, Brexit, Gilets jaunes, trade war. Michael, what's your favorite? Which one do you think has...
Let's see. So tough or to the choose most... from that plate of delicacies. I would say that the one that sort of weighs heavily on my mind and on my conscience, of course, the murder of Khashoggi. Obviously, a room full of journalists here that hits home very, very strongly for us. I have friends who are still overseas, and to think that someone could be murdered out of hand, you know, by a government is just a stunning thing. This is going to signal a shift in the entire relationship, not only between the U.S. and Saudi, but between Saudi and the rest of the Middle East.
Yeah, and the awful way this administration has handled that murder and refusing to acknowledge its own intelligence community's assessment, again, symptomatic of the administration's trying to dismantle what we know to be truth and reality and try to portray something very different. For me, very important was the withdrawal from the Iran nuclear deal, because again, this shows how this administration is trying to undo everything that has been done in the past. Now they're pulling out of Syria without a plan. You know, there's some who are predicting next it'll be Afghanistan and then NATO. And, you know, we know that this administration has not been too favorable towards NATO, which, you know, it's just mind-boggling, again, I use that term, that the United States can so be at the front of trying to dismantle the post-World War II order.
Indeed. And what about the Singapore summit? Perhaps a good gesture, you know, trying to sit down with the North Korean leader. But it seems mostly words, rhetoric. We don't see any real action toward denuclearization.
No, we don't. There's been no discernible action towards meaningful denuclearization. We have not seen missile testing. We haven't seen any testing of any nuclear capabilities explosive-wise, but we certainly know that they are continuing with their program. What the entire exercise seemed to have done is educate the North Korean leader and how to better conduct himself on Twitter and with the press.
He
no longer makes outrageous comments and statements and bluster and boasts, and he simply goes along with a program that is going to benefit his country. So
yes, he's become an acceptable figure on the world stage.
And we made him that.
He did not, and yes.
Because we gave him the meeting.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
That's right, which is very disturbing. But what about Europe, you know, the integrity of Europe, given the Brexit stalemate and these Gilets Jaunes protests, Tracy, which are really rocking France, which is a cornerstone of the continent. Some are saying this could spell not the end of Europe, but it's slippery slope, especially when the United States has withdrawn itself from the world stage.
Right. The United States has withdrawn. Europe is looking to, you know, to some sort of guidance and not seeing any. So you have Britain falling apart over Brexit. It was probably an ill-advised vote to begin with. And now Theresa May, the prime minister, is left to try to sort it out. Macron in France, you know, he was trying to proceed with climate change measures, and he's getting hit in the face. Germany, we've seen Angela Merkel lose power. And also, you know, the immigration issue does play in Europe as well, the xenophobia that has arisen over large waves of immigration. So in some ways, they're seeing much of what we see here, the xenophobia and a certain kind of populist nationalism rising.
Which leads me to a story I did not mention, and that is the election of Bolsonaro in Brazil. This is someone who loves the military dictatorship, a real populist, homophobic, misogynistic. That's not a very positive trend.
Well, we've seen this trend across Europe, see it in South America, the populist strongman. And it's just the flavor of the day. People feel that they need, in uncertain times, someone who will tell them what to do. And there is a group of people who are more than willing to do that. The question is, when do the people at large start to feel the pain of authoritarian rule? Hopefully it comes sooner rather than later.
And enthusiastically embraced by this government, I should say.
Well, we didn't get into the trade war, which was ignited with China, the tariffs we shall see in 2019. And unfortunately, another very sad story, which was the persecution of Rohingya by the Buddhist nationalist security forces in Myanmar. And even Nobel laureate Aung San Suu Kyi didn't have the, I'd say, decency in a sense to really condemn this atrocity, which the United Nations has characterized as genocide. But on that unfortunate, pessimistic note, that is all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Michael Williams of CBS Radio and Tracy Wilkinson, diplomatic and foreign policy correspondent for the LA Times. Encounter was produced in Washington. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for a look back at the best of Encounter in 2018 on The Voice of America.
sleeve. We just heard one.